One in five Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and deliver with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week are Sam Claiborne.
Welcome to the show, Damon.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Justin Davis.
Scoop.
And Nick Lamone joins us today.
They keep bringing me back.
Fresh back from a trip to Japan, which we'll want to hear all about in just
a
minute.
Oh, I didn't realize that. And I was already on a show with Nick today.
Spoilers. There's no other shows. It's just GameScoop.
Thank you. I don't know what Sam's talking about.
I didn't say it was about games.
And we got a great show for you this week, in spite of the fact it's a little bit slow out there in the world of video game news, but I think I've cobbled together some interesting topics. As usual, I rely on Scoop Nation and your emails to give us to spark our conversation topics.
It's our first episode of Game Cobble.
Game Cobble. That's what we do. Game Cobbler. We took a scoop of Game Cobbler. That's what we did.
Ooh.
Yeah. Delicious. Also, remember, what was the game, the joke? There was gaming jerky. What was that? It was game sausage? I think that's what it was. Anyway, but first, I saw the Mario movie. Justin, did you see it as promised?
Yeah, we did see it this weekend.
And Nick, have you seen it?
I have not. I thought I was trying to watch it in the native Nihongo, but it's not available in Japan yet. It comes out April 28th in Japan.
Huh?
Yeah,
whoa,
so I'm gonna watch it tomorrow.
Okay. Well, I loved it, and I'll avoid some heavy spoilers here for Nick. But I loved it. I was pretty surprised at how deep the references went.
Yeah.
Even some things there's some things that are just kind of goofy and silly, and they might have been embarrassing for Nintendo, but they could have just kept them swept under the rug. They're like, nope. When Donkey Kong comes out, the music that plays is amazing.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite moments in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, my son loved it as well. And even though he's only ever watched parts of movies on our TV at home, he had no idea what he was getting into. And he did really well just after the whole thing. He was a little bit impatient during the previews, because there's so many previews.
Yeah.
And he's like, "What?
There's
I thought we were going to see a Mario movie." And then in the beginning, there's a mean dog. And he did not like the mean dog.
Oh, yeah.
after that, he was fine.
The mean dog is intense.
Yeah. I mean, I loved it. And I also totally understand why it got mixed reviews.
Yeah. Right.
Because you have to know the games to get it, or else it's not going to make any sense. Or else you're
for your age, for a 40 something, you need to know the games and you need all this stuff. For a little kid, you need to know nothing. And then in between, you're missing so much and it's boring.
Yeah, he just the kids just recognize the characters and they're like, hey, there's Mario, there's Luigi, there's a fire flower.
Yeah.
But an adult who has to play the games is like, why is Mario wearing a cat suit?
Why does he run with his arms out like that? Why can Peach throw snowballs now? It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. No, the movie has very little, and I was talking about this. Like, I wish it had. So I think on the animation and set design and character design, it's an absolute home run. Like, the movie is beautiful and gorgeous and an absolute technical achievement. It does not have any of that same ambition from a storytelling or characterization standpoint. Like, it's making absolutely no effort at all to, like, be more than what, like, you know, it's not a Pixar movie at all. Where, like, there's no kind of deeper message. There's no kind of, like, playing against time. It's just, you know, any time that the movie would start to slow down a little and, like, oh, we might get some character beats or some actual heart, or, like, it's like, nope, like, they're riding go-karts now. Don't worry about it. Like, it's on to the next thing. And, like, I don't know. That's okay. Like, I didn't think it was bad. I didn't love it. I thought it was fine. Thought the movie was fine. And then, you know, but where I get take a little umbrage and get a little frustrated is people are like, well, it's a kids movie. What did you expect? I'm like, the kids movies don't have to be that way.
Yeah,
like,
examples of, I know, smart kids movies.
Pixar, you said it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing, is that the thing that Pixar uses to attract parents and kids and everybody in between is a certain amount of cerebral writing that's interesting, plots that are, like, unpredictable. And and it's just, they're just well-crafted films. And this is an adaptation of Super Mario Brothers. And, like, but like, for, you know, us, like, it is fun watching for all the little things. I don't want to go see it again.
No.
They didn't have that level of depth where it's like, well, the second time I watch this, I'm going to catch so much more stuff. Like, it's not even that. But, you know, what was there? It was like, I mean, I like seeing, you know, punch out stuff in the background, or, you know, just the inclusion of Kid Icarus is just like, why is this video game being played in this?
I know.
Out of every game on Earth.
Dude, like, that was in like the majorest of major motion picture on a big screen for everyone to see. It was so crazy and awesome.
Yeah. And then I actually didn't think about that until this exact moment, but that makes that makes the NES and that makes Nintendo canonical in the Mario movie. It's like, what does that mean? I don't want to think about it.
I do think it's also insulting to dismiss something as, oh, it's just a kids movie. Like, are you saying kids don't deserve good stuff? Because, like, I feel like there's plenty of good examples of movies, like, that are,
my sister's
just
a lot younger
stories
than me, and she would watch movies, you know, I'm sure everybody's kids here do the same thing. Watch movies over and over again, right? Like, had a VHS tape and would watch a movie over and over and over and over and over again. And there were, like, movies like Jurassic Park, you know, which are like, there's just enough for every age in that movie. And it's pretty scary for kids. Like, there's some violent stuff in that movie, but, like, even when you're a really little kid, like, you can watch that infinitely and find more and more each time. And that's what I'd expect from maybe other Nintendo franchises. Although I very much worry about them now.
Yeah. It felt, the movie felt very, very safe. I will say, like, one thing that I loved was all the musical cues and the remixes,
so,
and, like,
good,
that hit me so hard. And, like, you know, music is so closely tied to nostalgia too, that, like, every time I'm hearing, like, you know, the castle music or just all of them, except for the pop music. I did not need all those pop music interludes.
Well, they had the Beastie Boys, which is nice for Damon and I.
I think the reason that Beastie Boys song and that Aha song came out the same year as Super Mario Brothers.
That was
the thinking behind that.
So, yeah, I mean, Kid Icarus did not, though. So.
And so, you know, it's impossible for me to think about this movie objectively, where, like, if I'm hearing a musical cue and, like, watching something on the screen and it's, like, making me misty-eyed, like, I can't, I'm not, like, thinking about it in, like, a rational way. And so, like, but trying to, like, divorce myself from that, you know, it's just, the movie just sprints. Like, once it starts going, it just sprints till the end. And, you know, and that bummed me out a little bit. Like, I kind of wished for more, but man, like, even watching, like, if you're watching a video version of Scoop, like, it's unbelievable how gorgeous the movie is. Like, it's just beautiful. And that almost,
like,
makes up for it.
A spiny realized in 3D and this, like, fidelity is just like, whoa, it looks so good.
So some of the music adaptation stuff is kind of surprising. It'll be like the World 1-1 music for Mario 3's map screen, which is, like, super cool. Like, adapted to, like, a jazzy background. Like, you know, they picked interesting songs. Mario's ringtone is the GameCube intro screen, which, like, again, like, That has nothing to do with Mario. So cool. Like, why choose that? But I'm like, that's a really good ringtone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then after all the talk of Chris Pratt, I thought he was just, you know, he's just fine. But I actually think his relationship with Luigi Charlie Day, I thought that was actually, you know, pretty good, pretty touching.
Charlie Day killed it. That was a really good Luigi.
Jack Black killed it too. And he's amazing. Yeah. As Scuba. As Bowser. Yeah. Anyway, we had a great time with the movies.
Scoop.
Yeah. I think my last thought on this is like the most hype moment for my kids. I don't want to spoil the exact moment, but there's
I'm going to watch it. It's fine.
But even for like fans too, I'll just speak about it generally. It's like there's like the way that the Mario Kart sequence ends was like for them the one time that like they recognized, like they're like, they know Mario and Luigi and they know these characters and they actually played through Mario Odyssey, but like that was the one sort of like, for me the whole movie was like references and was all referential, and that was the one thing where like they had a smile and a laugh because they were sort of in on the joke of what was happening in that moment, and that was really cute. When they're sort of making their carts was cute.
Was good. Yeah, the whole kart racing section was my son's favorite part.
Yeah.
Nice, really?
Yeah. And then
it's funny, it's like, go ahead. Oh, yeah, I was just going to say, like I was originally like, it's a little weird that Mario Kart's in this movie and in it so prominently, but then I don't know how cynical of an attitude this is, but then I was like, well, but Mario Kart 8 has outsold almost every Mario game. Like, that's what Mario is to a lot of people.
But the way they put it in here was really tenuous about, like, the Pong kart culture. Yeah. It just doesn't exist. And
they both start with K.
It's very strange. Hey, Damon, is there a follow-up Mario experience now? Are you guys going to try a video game, or
he plays a lot of, like, Mario Kart and Mario Odyssey. And then
okay, so Odyssey, that's what I was gonna ask about.
He's watched gameplay videos of everything, so he's well versed in the Mario universe. Nick, there's a mid-credit scene and a post-credit scene, but the post-credit scene is really lame.
Okay. I'm gonna watch it at a matinee tomorrow.
If it was the only reference to the thing, you'd be like, oh wow, that's cool, but it's not. There is already a reference to the thing in the movie. Yeah, so I think they might have mixed that up a little bit. They might have added some stuff and
maybe
kind of not really corrected this.
Yeah. But based on we've got an email I want to go to that's sort of the movie makes for a good jumping off point. I went way back into the archives. This is an email. So first of all, let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like John in Charlotte, North Carolina did in April of 2020. This is an email from 3 years ago.
Game Cobble.
Yep. Here's a scoop of Game Cobbler. It says, thanks for all the entertainment you continue to provide on a weekly basis and continue to 3 years later. Recently, I enacted a rite of passage and allowed my 6-year-old to watch the Indiana Jones series. I'm proud to say he absolutely loved seeing all 3, and as far as he knows, only 3 movies. Thinking how to follow this up, I naturally decided to let him watch me play through the Uncharted series. Well, it'll be interesting to see if he takes his 9-year-old to go see Indiana Jones 5. The Dial of Destiny. Okay, so now they're going to play Uncharted. Very quickly, I was reminded of just how much cursing there is in those games. Now I'm stuck with the dilemma. Explain to him that he'll have to wait until he's older, or keep playing while using it as a teachable moment to explain why he's not allowed to use certain words, all the while praying his mother doesn't overhear us playing.
Man, I don't know. Like, I don't want to. Everyone's got different parenting styles, and everyone's kid is different. But, like, dude, like, those games are incredibly violent for a 6-year-old, in my opinion. There's people being shot in the face when you're 6, and like now you're a 6-year-old, and you know that that's a thing that can happen.
Yeah.
But then you draw the line at S's and F's. Like, I don't know, man. But that's me. That's maybe a little bit of a puritanical.
This is the question. He says, typically, when it comes to gaming, I've made an effort to avoid having my kids see me play anything with excessive vulgarity or nudity. Though, as a true hypocrite, I have no problem with letting them watch me hack slash and shoot my way through legions of people and monsters. So as a point of discussion for the parents on the panel, what has been your policy regarding how you determine what age appropriate means when it comes to video games? Also, with something like an optional voice track that bleeps out certain words, perhaps make you more open to what your kids can experience. So for me, my son is 3.5 years old. So like just like Mario games are all that he's seen, and the Lego Star Wars game. For like movies, he's only seen Superman and like some Disney, like Moana, Beauty and the Beast, that sort of thing. But he's seen all of Star Wars. So he's seen a lot of laser blasted and lightsaber battles for sure.
Yeah.
I do try to like, you know, we don't talk about death, killing, none of that. And when I was watching the Mario movie, Justin, I wonder if this occurs to you, like when I put on my parenting hat, they say like kill you in the movie. And then they say hate, like I hate you. And I just think like, if you're just making a kid's movie, isn't it easy enough to just avoid those words? And like, you know me, you know that I want my movies to be like as violent and gory as possible. But when it's a kid's movie, it's like, maybe just like, I don't need my kid knowing. I don't want to hear him say, I hate that. I hate you. You know, that's just my parenting hat on.
My girls are a little bit older than your kids, and we're over, like the H word is out and about now, unfortunately, but like I did mark in the movie, and granted it's the villain that says it, which is a very important distinction. Yeah. But like, you know, if this doesn't happen, I'm going to kill you. It's like very matter of fact, like, and like that jumped out at me too. And I was like,
Kingo wouldn't know what that means. And I don't want to have to explain that to him now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, so, for sure.
Anyway, that's all.
Like, you definitely like follow, like for me, like you follow your kids' leads, and like both of my daughters are actually like pretty sensitive. That's just their disposition and that's how they are as people. And so, you know, we follow their lead on it. And so we tend to age movies down, like they're happier and more engaged. We do a family movie night once a week. And like, you know, if something's too intense, they get freaked out and they don't like it and they're not having as good of a time. And so, you know, We're happy to sort of take things at their pace. We showed them the Goonies. that was like, you know, 99% of it's fine, except when Chunk is they're trying to torture him by putting his hand in the blender.
Oh, yeah.
And so like in hindsight, like my wife and I are both like, ooh.
The kids swear a lot in that movie too.
Yeah. That's and like swearing, you know, you're right. You can use it as a teachable moment, except it's really gratuitous. Like
it's kids doing it, which I think is the funniest thing ever.
within the first 30 seconds of that movie, Chunk goes, oh shit. Like it's right at the start, and we are both like, oh
yeah, he gets his ice cream all over the window by that pole position machine. Or maybe it's missile command, but they mentioned pole position, remember that? What is that, your score in pole position?
Yeah,
it's Corey Feldman burn.
Yep. Yes, it is. And so that's what, like, you know, and we had the same thing with Star Wars, Damon. We're like, we delayed showing our kids Star Wars for a long time because in the cantina that jerk gets his arm chopped off. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm happy to I'm happy to not let my children know that that's a possible thing that can happen. Is like, you know, like the movie's not that violent. Yeah, like I think the movie is fine. It's age appropriate and it's got a good message and good moral and the good guys are good and the bad guys are bad. Like, but you know, but even so, like we chose to wait another year or two as a result of scenes like that.
Yeah.
As someone with zero kids, take what I say with a grain of salt, but there is something that harkens back to childhood to me of having those moments of this movie has an unexpectedly dark moment in it that is like, can't believe I got away with watching that with my parents. They let me do it. So like, there's still some sort of like warm spot looking back in hindsight, but yes. As a kid, my parents were very adamant that I adhere to the ESRB ratings for games and movies as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the idea of a PG cut for games, because legitimately, mm-hmm. that's a level of like potential accessibility and expands mm-hmm. your audience. You know, if a parent could buy Uncharted and then strain out, you would have to strain out the violence. I'm not talking about the swears. I'm talking about and that game is all about shooting. So that game wouldn't really work that way. But there are games that probably could work where, you know, you're reducing the game to puzzles and running and climbing, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, in the 3 years since this email was written, think about how much accessibility options in games 100%. Have expanded. Like,
yeah,
I'm sure they could just, you know, have a setting where they bleep, they just, you know, bleep all the swears. You could turn all the gun fire into like pew 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 noises, or like you said, Sam, that's pretty smart. Uncharted is like little combat scenarios, and then you're on to the next climbing and puzzle section. Just take out all the combat scenarios, right?
Yep, exactly.
Absolutely possible.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, at least in the case of me and my family and children, like, it's less to do with, like, you know, is there blood or not blood when someone gets shot? Like, does blood come out? Like, it's more to do with the intensity of the situation and the peril the characters are in. And you know, they get freaked out. Like, they don't like it and they're not having fun. And that's what makes me think that it's, like, less age appropriate, is they're not able to, like, enjoy it as a piece of media and be like, I'm having fun watching these characters, like, overcome an obstacle. Like, it just bugs them. Like, just their emotional development is not at the age where they can absorb that stuff.
It's all fun until the Nazi faces melt off and then you have a bunch of crying kids.
Or explode. Yes.
Scream and explode.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Nick, Japan, was that your first trip to Japan?
No, this is my third time, but this is my girlfriend's first time. So this was you know, it's a thing we've been planning for a long time. The pandemic put a hamper in things, but we finally got to make it happen after 3 years.
So how'd it go? I think 2018 was maybe the last time I went to Japan. So it's been several years now. How is it post-pandemic?
It's honestly, right. It's that weird dilemma. But for the most part, like, first time I ever went to Japan, it was just one of those things like, the people wear a lot of face masks here. And it really hasn't changed much more. So, like, if somebody isn't wearing a mask, they probably are travelers. They are foreigners to some extent. Yeah. But it's kind of just the common consensus, like, yeah, just put a mask on, dummy. But apart from that, like, some cool marquee, like, game things that we did, Super Nintendo World. That was the first time I've gone. I went to the one in Osaka, which was a wonderful time. I got to play Baby Bowser's boss level thing that they have there, which is really cool. Bowser Jr. They have a Yoshi ride that's exclusive to the Osaka, so that was really cute.
What kind of ride is that?
It's very akin to something like the Storybook ride at Disneyland. Okay. It's pretty similar, very chill. You just are in a Yoshi, a different colored Yoshi. Everyone gets to go in a different color, and it is very cute.
You're in a Yoshi? Oh, my God.
Yeah, you're riding on top of the Yoshi. It's very, very cute.
PG-13. Gutted Yoshi.
Unfortunately, we got the orange one, which sucks. I wanted the blue one. But it was very cute. Tears welled up while we're waiting in line because the Yoshi's Island songs or Yoshi's Story song starts playing. That I was like, oh my gosh, this is wonderful. Food was great, good time. There's Pikmin scattered throughout the Super Nintendo World too. If you know where to look, it's very cute. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the high points for me was taking my girlfriend to a arcade in Japan. They still exist. RIP Giant Sega building, but seeing her just play her first like prize grabber machine, her claw machine. And then I was like, come to me to the fourth floor. We're going to play some old games. So just like playing Dodonpachi with her, yes, and you know, Alien so versus good. Predator, the beat 'em up. And then my favorite though was me and her hopped onto LA machine guns and we were just giant machine gun just battling our way through the streets of LA. It was so much fun just being able to share that with her. Very, very good time.
Nice.
Only other thing to point out is the retro game scene, because of course you got to stop by Super Potato. Just pillaged. It is a former husk of what it used to be.
Oh, man,
pre-pandemic.
So
it used to be like bins and bins of Game Boys everything. That you could just like choose whatever you want. You walk out with dirt cheap. Everyone knows what their games are worth now. Everything's so darn expensive. I got very close to buying a GBA Micro, but decided against it. But that's $400 for a GBA Micro.
Oh,
madness.
Wow. Crazy.
This was in Tokyo, right? Not
this was in Tokyo. Yeah, if you do absolutely want to actually spend money, I would say check out the Osaka one, which has a lot more stock than the Tokyo branch and relatively better pricing.
That must be brand new. I was there 4 years ago and there wasn't an Osaka Super Potato.
I think the last time I was there was 2018 as well. I think it was there. I might be mistaken, but
there used to be a Nagoya one and then one in Tokyo. And I've only been to the Nagoya one and it was, I went there looking for a specific set of things that I got, which was really cool still, but that was 4 years ago. I got
looking back now,
Hudson Shot Watch.
What'd you buy?
I got the Hudson shooting watch, the little controller we used to have on the office, the yellow thing. Got that. And they had multiple options, but I got the original one because they did like a reissue series, which are really cute. They're like little keychain size ones. Like, and I wish I would have just got those two now. But I also got Doki Doki Panic, and I really wanted it with this, like, the version you want to get has a Mario sticker in it, which is the only thing that connects it to Super Mario Brothers before, you know, Super Mario Brothers 2. And as like Mario with like, you know, and like kids in Japan, like kept their games in like perfect shape a lot of times and have all the inserts and everything. So like, it's really fun to like go and find like something like that pristine and together. Like what kid didn't in America, every kid would have used that sticker. There's no way. There's just no way.
They would have just put it right on the cartridge too.
Yeah. Or they would have put it on their wall, like somewhere completely.
Skateboard.
Yep.
It was very cool. All right. One of these years when my kids are older and can appreciate it, I'll take them to Japan. And then, Justin, do I understand correctly? You're back on World of Warcraft?
Yeah, I am. And I feel like I can already, like, a month from now, it's going to be like, look, guys, it's fine. Like, I only missed two of my kids' soccer games, and I only called into sick to work three times. Yeah, dude, World of Warcraft, they make it dangerous because, like, you know, you could actually see my tweets about it this weekend. I'm like, I'm thinking about getting back into World of Warcraft. And then I downloaded it and then I installed it and then I'm playing it and it's free up until like level 20, which is actually pretty long. That's like several hours of gameplay. And then it's easy to pay $15 and it's like, bam, there you go. Like that funnel of like getting back into WoW, they make shockingly easy. The game is in a really, really good place right now. So, okay. Let me take a step back. when the game came out, the level cap was 60. And with each expansion, they added 10 more levels. So like level 70, level 80, and your character would have new skills and new abilities. That was cool. It made sense, right? But it got sillier and sillier the longer the game went on by like, you know, your level cap is now like 120. And if you made a new character, like they accelerated how fast it would take you to get to level cap because they didn't want it taking hundreds and hundreds of hours. So like it was silly. Like you were just leveling up constantly, nonstop, unlocking skills. It's bombarding you with everything. So they did two really smart things in a row. One, they did a level squish where they reset it back so that the level cap was 60 again. So, you know, they stripped out a bunch of extra talents and skills and stuff that just bloat from like people's character progression and made progression feel more meaningful again. But the second most awesome thing that they did was that for everything but the newest expansion, the whole world just scales with you now. So for someone like me that like I dip in and out of WoW every, you know, 6 or 7 years, like I actually checked, I haven't played the game since 2016. it's perfect because I can make a new character. I can go through the whole story of, like, you know, the expansion that came out three expansions ago, and I could level that character up from one. And if they reach a certain level, I can make a new character and just keep going. Like, they finally fulfilled this vision of, like, you know, make a new level one character and go through the Wrath of the Lich King, make a new level one character and go through Mists of Pandaria. And, like, it's very sort of player friendly in a way that, like, if you just want to chill out and have, like, a chill time exploring this world and trying out different character classes, that used to kind of be pretty hard to do. And now they've finally gotten that right after 20 years.
How, that's awesome. How social are you when you play WoW?
Oh, I'm very much playing it as a single player game. Yeah, for sure. Like, and that's fine. Like, and we'll see. Like, look, the other thing,
you have really, like, an obscene gesture when people try to be friends
with you. I just ignore them. And I'm also not playing on a, I'm not playing on a PvP server. So, you know, it's fine. Like, but, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like MMOs, along with, like, sports games or whatever, they get put into some other category of games, right? Like, oh, it's really good for an MMO or whatever. But, like, WoW, like, going back to it for the first time in, like, 6 or 7 years, I'm like, no, this is just a great video game. Like, the music's really good. Like, the character classes are actually pretty crunchy and fun to play and really distinct from one another. And the exploration is really rewarding and there's lots of fun secrets. The writing is actually really clever and funny and, like, just referential, but not in a way that, like, feels twee or stupid. Like, I don't know. I definitely have a newfound appreciation for it of, like, if I don't want to get on the gear treadmill of, like, okay, now I got to raid and do all this stuff. And, like, if you can play the game not as a lifestyle game, but just treat it more like an RPG, like, I think that the game deserves more respect put on it than maybe it's gotten over the last 5 years or so. Like, it's really great.
I've never played World of Warcraft, but I think it's very cool that it is still going 20 years later, still being updated, still has a community, and it's the best version of itself today. Because most games for 20 years ago are either just, you know, locked onto whatever system they're around, hoping that they'll get a remake or a remaster someday. But World of Warcraft's still there, still going.
I do wonder, so the game has native controller support now. Like, if you just plug in an Xbox controller, like, the UI changes and it just supports your controller. And so I feel like this is based off nothing. This is just my personal speculation. But, like, that means you're a half step away from the game being on consoles, right? Like, if you get it working with a controller. So, you know, I don't know.
Being on Xbox, if all Xbox goes according to Xbox's plans.
Yeah, like, if we see WoW on Xbox and included in Game Pass, like, dude, that's awesome.
Well, but, like, the subscription model is their whole thing, right? I don't know. I'm not sure how they can make that
work. Well, or whatever, like, some maybe there's a Game Pass plus WoW, and then it costs less than the two cost individually or something. Sure. Yeah, game's great. I'm playing a druid. It can turn into a cat. It's great.
All right, I've got our next email queued up, but first, this is James from Washington, D.C. James asks, what do you think the chances are of getting a next-gen version of Breath of the Wild when the next-gen Nintendo console eventually comes out? I'm sure Tears of the Kingdom will be great, but I'd still really like to play both games on better hardware. Sam was already saying that he you think they're going to resell Tears of the Kingdom to us when the next hardware comes out.
Yeah, and, like, maybe any other company would pack it in, but Nintendo would never do that. They will do that in 30 years, like they did with the Super Mario 3D collection, right? But everything gets into a remake and an HD upgrade and stuff now. Nintendo, unlike many other games out right now, are still a generation behind on resolution. And now that when 4K TVs become, you know, the standard, which they're rapidly becoming, Nintendo will adapt and probably make things that scale to 4K, because that's just what all processors will do by then. You won't be able to get something that doesn't do 4K. So it makes, you know, the logical sense to, you know, kind of up-res this game and put it out on the next system. Unless the next system is crazy and has crazy controllers, you can't play any old games. And remember, that's always the risk with Nintendo.
That's true. Yeah. Except it's hard to imagine them torpedoing. Like, the Switch has been such an incredible success, you know.
But that's what people said about before, the Wii and motion controls.
Yes, you're right. Okay, you're right. Yes. Yep, you're right.
It's an interesting question. Like the Wii really is, or excuse me, the Switch really is kind of like a port machine, right? Like every single big Wii U game and mini Wii games eventually got ported to the Switch, and Nintendo gets a little bit of a pass from it because the Switch has this portable form factor where people are like, yes, I would like to have, you know, Pikmin 3 on the go. So, you know, I'm a little bit less confident that they can get away with that a second time of like, okay, here's, you know, Breath of the Wild HD and now it's in 4K. Like, I feel like the Switch is just a little bit of a special confluence of events that let them, you know, re-release nicer looking versions of Mario Kart and every other game.
This might be optimistic on my part, but I kind of suspect the next iteration of hardware on the Switch will be more akin to something like a Series S to Series X kind of jump, where they still play the same fundamental hardware, but thanks to some sort of retroactive update, maybe Breath of the Wild on the Super Switch will be like up-res letterboxed 4K, where, you know, checkerboxed 4K, where it uses a special like rendering technique to mimic a native 4K image. Because, you know, if you play a lot of Switch games now, whether it be, you know, Breath of the Wild or Kirby, there's parts of the game where, when you hold the camera in a very specific location with not a lot of stuff happening on screen, it wants to run at more than 30 frames per second. And so I think that something like a Super Switch can unlock that potential of, you know, in Kirby scene, in the, what's the Kirby game, the new, not the 2D one, but the 3D one, the big open world-ish one, whatever that game is called. Yeah, the mouthful mode one. There's portions of that game that do run in 60. Forgotten Lands, there you go. Portions do run in 60 frames per second. It's just once you venture out into the giant world again, it starts to chug. So, like, I just think it's going to be stronger hardware that plays the same games that just will hopefully get updates for first-party titles that, you know, maybe have a few more bells and whistles.
Yeah. Nick, everyone was very excited after the last and final Zelda trailer came out. Does that include yourself?
Dude, I was losing my mind. I was on the Tears of the Kingdom trailer came out while I was on another shoot for IGN. And I woke up very early because our call time was very early. I woke up an hour before I needed to make sure I could watch that. The moment it happened, man, and I'm just, yeah, I'm all in. This is exactly what I want. Not much to say other than yes. Yeah. Very, very hype inducing.
Very exciting. I hope that they, on the next hardware, they can package both Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom. It'd be such a cool package considering the fact that they both like share a very similar world and map. So that whether or not it's likely, I just think that would be a very cool package.
They did do it for Ocarina and Majora's Mask on the GameCube.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Dude, what happens in Tears of the Kingdom if you combine spear plus meat? That's what I want to know.
You just get those little skewers you can put over the fire that are already in Breath of the Wild, but now you get to do it.
Nice.
There is a news item I want to discuss this week, and it involves Lord of the Rings Gollum. Is everyone up to date on this? Let me catch everyone up to speed. First of all, Lord of the Rings Gollum is finally coming out next month, May 25th. But it was announced in 2019. This game has had a long road. It was just announced in 2019. We didn't get to see the game until a year later. There were screenshots, and a lot of people were like, oof, I don't know about this, the look of this game. It was a choice, let's say that. And then as gameplay details started to emerge, a lot of us, it was just kind of like, why developer data? Like, why did they think Gollum was the right choice for the main character in a Lord of the Rings game? Seemed kind of strange. It would end up being delayed into 2022, and IGN actually wrote a pretty negative preview of it after our previewer got to see or play the game. It was in May of 2022. Well, then it was delayed again into 2023 sometime, and it was just in March that it finally got this May 25th release date. So it's finally coming out in less than a month, but now we've got word that this is so weird. There's a special edition called the Precious Edition. And one of the perks in the Precious Edition is that all of the elves will speak their own elvish language. I think Sindarin is what it's called.
Sindarin, yeah.
But only in the Precious Edition, not in the base game. In the base game, the elves will speak that here and there, but otherwise, if you're playing the game in English, the elves are just going to speak English. So they've like hid this feature, this immersive feature behind the paywall of the Precious Edition, which is $10 more, which sounds so shady to me. It's like they've already recorded it. Why are you holding this thing back from the other players? It's almost like they had this special edition but didn't know what to put in it. And they're like, oh, just throw that extra Elvish dialogue that we recorded into there.
You're looking at this the wrong way, Damon.
Okay.
How you should look at it is that you should be able to pay $10 for any game to be fully enacted in Elven.
This is
just the start of a trend. Yes.
Okay.
$10, you get full Elvish. That's what I would like.
Full Elvish.
I think it's interesting that, you know, they'd been working on this game for several years and delayed it again. And like the subtext here is I feel like they figured out halfway through, like, oh, this is a bad idea for a video game. We shouldn't have done this. This doesn't make any sense. But now they're locked in. No, I mean, the language thing, like, yeah, no, I agree with you, Damon, except like, but that's every like collector's edition and fancy edition has, you know, like a new outfit and a new costume, an exclusive quest, yada, yada. Like all that's already in the game. Right.
And they chose how much it costs to like go to a voice actor and be like, dude, you got to do this again in Elvish. And they're like, no, like, okay, we're going to pay you more though. Like still no. Well, what if we pay you this much, but we have to charge, you know, we'll have to figure out the finances.
Yeah, except they could have just done that in the beginning. Like they didn't have to record it twice. They could have just recorded Elvish for the elves.
You're putting me in the weird position of defending Lord of the Rings Gollum. But like, I do like every game has a digital deluxe edition that costs $10 more that includes some quest, some NPC, some garbage that's like not in the other edition. So I don't know.
Yes.
Seems pretty normal to me.
I'm not saying it's good. I'm also putting myself in the position of, you know, like, I also don't, I'm not going to play this game. I don't care. You know, it doesn't mean anything to me. It just doesn't sit right with me. Like, I don't think it's dissimilar than if in Star Wars Jedi Survivor, the aliens would speak English. unless you got the special edition, and then they'll speak whatever their alien language is.
It is dawning on me that these digital deluxe editions have to strike a balance between, they have to offer digital extras that feel worthwhile and like, ooh, I want that. Yeah. But you don't want it to be so good that you're mad that it's locked behind this $10 more edition. Like, so they have a needle that they have to thread there.
Mm-hmm. Give the man a new loincloth. Give him a cosmetic loincloth upgrade. Yeah. That's all we really need.
Do funny costumes for Gollum like the rest of the games do. Give him a little top hat. And a cane, a monocle.
I think the problem with charging for something like the Sindarin is just like, it feels like it's almost detrimental to the story that they're trying to tell. Because typically if something, you know, if a culture is speaking another language and, you know, the main character can't understand it, there's usually a reason for that contextually. So the fact that it's so arbitrary just feels like a, I don't know, what do we, how do we charge somebody something? Charge them for elves. They like elves, right? It just seems so arbitrary and silly.
Yeah. Well,
I'll play this game. I'm gonna take one for the team.
Okay. Well,
what if it's like Game of the Year, 2023?
What if? Yeah. What if it's better than Zelda?
You will be ashamed of your words and deeds.
I like seeing how people imagine things that I care about in the Lord of the Rings universe. Mm-hmm. I don't like it so much when they make up stuff on their own and add it to the universe. So, like,
how did you feel about Shadow of Mordor with that kind of context? Like, you don't like it when they extrapolate and make up stuff.
Yeah, that part was corny, but the orcs were so good and the game was so fun, right? Like, it was just great. It's just like, it was kind of silly where you're like, oh, there's a force ghost and he made the ring. Yeah. Like, I mean, come on.
It's like, there's a rule, there's a general
rule. He's inside
of you. Yeah, like the rule of awesome is like you can bend lore or break lore if like what you're doing is awesome enough, people just won't care. Like that's those Shadow of Mordor games definitely match the rule of awesome. Where like, no, like it's not faithful to Tolkien lore, but like it's so cool that people are like, okay, it's fine. Yep.
And then they were never heard from again.
R.I.P. R.I.P. Talion.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how things go for Lord of the Rings Gollum when it's out May 25th. This is
maybe it'll have Nemesis mode, unlike any other game that's ever come out since.
I mean, yeah. What's going on with Wonder Woman? Nobody knows. Yeah. This is Brian Hurd, Servin in Irvine, California. says, I'm a bit of a newer listener to the podcast, maybe about a year or so, and I look forward to hearing your banter every week. There's one thing that I have a question about. What is up with you saying nicely job or nicely attempt during Video Game 20 Questions? Is there a story behind this? Please explain.
Please explain.
This is lore, dude. This is lore.
Yeah, this is lore. Yeah, this is episode 719. So over the years, we've developed some inside jokes over the years. And they just sort of like snowball down the hill. Nicely job is just something dumb that I said after we were playing one of our games. I think it was GameScope, and that like somebody won the game, and I just it was just a slip of the tongue. I said nicely job, and then it just stuck. That's it. So we say nicely job.
It's a mashup of nicely done and good job.
Yep.
You hurt my heart saying episode 719. Like in my head, when people are like, how many episodes of GameScoop has there been? I'm like, oh, about 600. I'm only off by 120.
Yeah. Well, please look forward to next week's episode 720 when we will be devoting the full episode to the classic arcade game 720 Degrees.
Yes. Music by Faceplant.
Yeah. So nicely job is that. Maybe we should take this opportunity to explain some of the other inside jokes. Omega Cops is just an anagram of GameScoop. That's all that is. Mm-hmm.
So is Goose Camp.
So is Goose Camp. And so is
A Scoop Gym.
So is A Scoop Gym. And so is Go Mop a Sec.
The less frequently employed, but no less important.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's true.
Emag Pooks is Game Scoop backwards.
Emag Pooks. Yeah. So, a little Easter egg is after I say, let's check in with the listeners, I'm going to read an email. Justin always says,
hey, listeners. Although I stole that from Greg Miller, to be fair.
There you go. That's how long we've been doing this show. We used to do the show with Greg Miller, who's now been at Kind of Funny longer than he was at IGN.
Come on. Oh.
I know. Oh. I know.
That's one of those facts that, like, Cleopatra is closer to the modern day than, like,
yeah. What else? Are there any other inside jokes? I'm missing I don't remember how we started saying it was the only video game podcast.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what that – I don't remember the origins.
There's the dumping is illegal.
That's called dumping, and it's illegal. That's was from one of the older magazines. I think it was from when it was between PlayStation and the Saturn. And Sega wanted to put out Saturn.
I think it was like Jack Trenton or something, right?
Yeah, no, it was someone at PlayStation.
Yeah, I thought it was Saturn was
priced too low. They're going to dump it, quote unquote, at a very, very low price just to undercut their competitor. And the exec from PlayStation was like, that's called dumping and it's illegal.
Yeah, or maybe he said it's against the law. We always misquote it, but ours is better.
We do misquote it, but I like saying that's called dumping and it's illegal. That helps the show make a little bit more sense to some of our newer listeners. And that brings us to Video Game 20 Questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Whack from a redacted location.
Why is Damon, this... what book is behind you? Is that the Super Nintendo one?
This I have is that the one. Atari 2600 and 7800 Visual Compendium.
Ooh.
Also,
I contributed to the NES and Super Nintendo ones.
Oh,
wow. Yeah, I saw your name in them. I have both those.
I was kind of surprised when they showed up. I was like, what?
I'm currently bookmarked on.
It's so cool.
Air Sea Battle.
I love the graphical spreads they do in those compendiums. They did a great job.
I learned about something completely new from reading this. You know about the Venetian Blinds demo that Activision made for the Atari 2600?
No.
It's an FU game. They made it as an FU game. And it has something to do with, Activision... employees going on their own because they weren't being credited. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the specifics right off that, but they made this demo to prove a point, and it's called the Venetian Blinds. And look how cool it looks. And it works. Wow. Yeah, I'm trying to get the glare off. It works to control. You can use the controller to raise and lower these blinds, Venetian blinds, and there's this like awesome looking gradient sunset in the background.
Should be impossible on the 2600. Yeah. That's what makes this amazing.
And you can watch this demo. It's on YouTube. Just look up Atari 2600 Venetian Blinds demo. It looks so cool. I can't believe how cool it looks. It's awesome. It's like, yeah. I don't think Vaporwave is still a thing anymore, but it's the most Vaporwave thing I've seen in a while.
I named my newsletter Paperwave.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Okay. Let the questioning begin.
Did this game come out in the 70s, 80s, or 90s?
No.
Did this come out for the Xbox 360 era of games?
No.
Is this game on Nintendo hardware?
Yes.
It's weird that their location was redacted.
Was this game published by Nintendo?
No.
Is this game playable on the Nintendo Switch?
Yes. That's five.
Ooh.
Well, that narrows it down to everything.
Yeah. Was it originally released like contemporary to the Switch era?
Yes.
All right, we got a Switch game not published by Nintendo. Was this designed or developed in Japan?
No.
Was this game also on other systems?
Yes.
So it's multi-platform, came to Switch. Is this an indie game?
Yes.
All right, so we got our Stardews and our Bindings of Isaac and our Meat Boys.
Is this game played from a 2D side-scrolling view?
No, that's 10.
Does it have pixel art?
No.
Ooh.
Man.
Maybe like a Rocket League or something?
Do you play as a vehicle?
No.
It's probably not Rocket League.
Probably not. Okay, so it's an indie game, but it may still be 2D, right? It could be right. Like painterly or something.
Yeah, but no pixel art and no side scrolling.
No side scrolling. So it could be top down, like Hades, right?
Right. Sure. Yeah, or 3D or isometric, like you know, anything else.
2016.
Damon won't be able to answer any questions about that.
I think it's
Did this game get a 9 or above on IGN.com?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one. I like that.
Well, new one. New material for this nice spring episode of Emag Pook.
Yeah. Is this a... I'm trying to go for game genre here.
Just do three. Just pick three genres.
Is this a racing game, puzzle game, or fighting game?
Yes.
Oh, all right.
You're not in a vehicle, so it could be fighting. Puzzle or fighting? Is this a fighting game?
No. That's 15.
So it's a puzzle game.
Or a racing game where you're just running real fast.
Where you're on foot, yes.
There was that Sonic racing game where you're on foot, but that was not that was from the 90s.
There's like 20 Sonic and Mario the Olympic games.
So we're saying it's a puzzle game, but then but then which kind of puzzle? Like an action, like a moving blocks around quickly in a frantic way puzzle game, or like I gotta stop and think puzzle
is
game?
Is the newest Tetris on?
Tetris Switch? Effect?
Is Tetris Effect connected on? I think Tetris Effect Connected is on Switch.
I don't know if it's on the Switch.
The Tetris 99 was on Switch, but it wasn't on other things, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Is it should we just ask if it's a block based puzzle game?
Yeah.
Or should we just ask if it's a puzzle game just so we don't screw this up like SimStar?
No, but we know you're not in a vehicle and we know we eliminated the fighting game thing. So it's definitely a puzzle game. And we only have 5 questions left. And maybe that's the death of us, but like, you know.
Would you call this a block-based puzzle game?
No.
Man. It could be a point-and-click puzzle game.
Maybe something like a Baba Is You type.
Could be like a Baba Is You type. Does this game have like story elements to it? It's like a story. Yeah, it's like
lightly. Light story elements.
So, but that eliminates like a point and click adventure game is where I was trying to get with that. But Damon gave us, he was generous.
Yeah. And it would eliminate like a puzzle bobble, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Or Puyo or whatever.
Unless they have some weird cutscenes in between. Oh boy.
Made in America too. Or made outside of Japan, I guess we know. Maybe it may, what about mobile games that could have ended up on Switch?
Yeah, that's a pretty good shout. I'm having a hard time thinking. just in general.
Yeah.
So and, like, it, and it came to other stuff too. Although
it didn't get good scores either, it sounds like.
Well, not a 9, not like amazing. Mm-hmm. So, but no block pushing, but has, you know, kind of light story elements. What does that leave us with?
All I can think of is like Professor Layton type stuff or Henry Hatsworth. Like a different type of game underpinning it. Or it's a racing game.
Yeah, or it's a racing game, exactly. But you're not in a vehicle. I would call it Layton more than light story, though, definitely.
There's the Pokemon Company's horse racing game.
Oh, Pocket Card Jockey.
Else. Yeah, love that game. Super fun.
Yeah, they came out with the Apple Arcade version of it that I played.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah.
That would fit all the criteria.
It changes the poker gameplay to solitaire.
Oh, interesting.
But everything around that is the same. How weird is that? Oh boy. How can we? I don't even know. Is this okay? Is it worth knowing if it's a multiplayer or not? Is that helpful?
Yeah. Like, what if it's like? I don't know if this would count, but like, what's like Slay the Spire? Like, what about? Are there any strategy games that are kind of puzzly? Like,
Yeah, Slay the Spire is not bad if Damon would call that a puzzle game.
I feel like that he wouldn't call it a puzzle game, though.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Two questions.
I'm going to think of any puzzle games.
Two questions and a guess.
I don't know.
And I should say... I'll throw you a bone. The question was, is this a racing puzzle or a fighting game? And it's true, it was one of those, but like also kind of something else, but for the purposes of the question.
Yeah.
So it's kind of two different types of genres, but
yeah, I think one of those type of things. Justin was kind of trying to suss that out from the kind of separate it from point and click. So it's like,
yeah, you know. But we don't know.
I guess it could be like no, because that's story based. Anything with like lots of dialogue, right?
Yeah.
Light story.
What about like a puzzle platformer like Celeste?
Yeah, although that's pixel art, but yeah, I like that. Or like,
it's not a platformer though, right?
But it's a. But, or what about like Takitori?
Yeah. Lemmings, for example, is a puzzle based.
Battle Chef Brigade.
Mm.
Except for that's 2D, but like something in that general vicinity.
We got to ask a question. I don't know where to go.
Same.
I don't know. Should we ask if it's like a cute game or like a sci-fi game or
does it have multiplayer?
Yes.
I don't know what that does. That does something. That's making me think about like a Tetris attack style game, but like, but not blocks. Is there some head to head puzzle game that doesn't have blocks?
I mean, there's Puyo.
Yeah, but that counts as blocks. So it's just round blocks.
Oh boy. Where do you get in trouble?
Pretty logistical.
Yeah, it's also made in Japan, clearly. So, I don't know. I need a Hail Mary here. I don't really know where to go with this.
It depends on how mean Damon was being with that blocks answer. Cause there's grindstone and like, it's not technically blocks. They're little monsters, but like they're basically blocks. They're just blocks with personality.
I'll assure you, I was not being mean with my answer.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, nice. I think we just need to give up after another question. So
what about Shovel Knight Pocket Dungeon?
Or what about, Steam World Dig?
Yeah.
Or Shovel Knight's pixelated.
The Steam World card game.
Are those on other platforms?
Yeah, they are.
So any of the Steam Worlds?
Yeah.
You could ask. Is it okay? Are we at that point? Are we at the Hail Mary point?
Yeah, sure.
Is this a Steam World game?
No. No, I'm afraid not.
Okay.
That brings us to our guest.
That was it, right? Yeah, we give up.
Everyone's just giving up? Okay.
Let's pick a racing game and guess it. Can you think of any?
Play as a vehicle.
All right.
Well, there's a game called Speedrunners where you race on foot, and it is multiplayer.
Yeah. Okay, go for it. Is it Speedrunners?
It is not Speedrunners. No.
Aww.
I think you'd consider this a puzzle stealth game. And it was developed in Australia, released in 2019.
The Origami.
Still don't know.
It's Untitled Goose Game.
Oh. Nah,
so
never would have got
we were
that.
On the right track with the adventure part, right? But it is light on story.
Yeah, no dialogue. Just the goose goes on a little mischievous adventure. That's the story.
Sometimes we used to ask about cel-shaded graphics too. That would have been nice.
Graphic style. And then I gave up on asking about camera angle, but I bet if we would have landed on the isometric camera, we could have made
it. You said isometric and it resonated with me. I was like, we gotta ask that.
Sometimes you ask if you play as a human. If you had learned that you play as an animal, I'm sure that would have been.
Yeah, that's a funny one. I'm surprised we didn't give this a 9. I thought I got a higher score. I think this game is so good.
I love this game too. And I only know this because I looked right before we recorded. We gave it an 8.
Okay.
So just missed the cutoff of your question. Yeah, but I love this game.
Yeah. Yep. An all time great for me. I just really adore it.
Yeah.
And it's hard and it's cool to solve the problems in it.
It is. And it has a good ending too. It ends in a satisfying way.
Yeah. The goose becomes Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh, and if you didn't know, they patched in multiplayer after release, so two people can play.
That's insane. Two people can play. I did not know that.
You can play two geese at the same time.
Oh, that's so, so stupid. I love it.
Yeah, so we go. Well, nicely attempt. Thank you, Wack, from a redacted location. He redacted it from even me, so I don't know where Wack was writing from.
Oh.
And I didn't know that game was made in Australia either.
I didn't either. By the way.
They don't, you know what?
That's like New Zealand or something.
The developer House, they haven't released a game since. So like that was 3-4 years ago.
They bought their yachts and retired.
If you release a game like that, you just retire.
Yeah. It just makes me excited. Fun. Like we're probably not that far away from like whatever that team's working on next. So that's always fun.
Viewers, listeners, if you have your own suggestions for video game 20 questions, email them to me. Email address gamescoop.
Not like that one. That one was crap.
Email games that Sam can guess. Roughly, they should be released between the years 1980 and 1989.
Yeah, I borked that one last week.
Nick was star last week. I don't know if you know that one.
That's the one with the scary VO, right? Yeah.
The VO that's in the theme song for this very show.
It's like, well, I haven't used that one in a while, but
yeah, but still.
Anyway, thank you, Nick. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Justin. Thank you to Tayo working behind the scenes to make this episode possible. That's all the scoops we have for you this week. My name is Damon. This is IGN Game Scoop, and we're out.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.